Henry Ford, the International Jew. Chapter 41, Jews use the peace conference to bind Poland. There is one difference between the Polish report of Sir Stuart Samuel and those of the others, which illustrates a difference between the Jewish mind and the general mind. The type of mind represented by the other investigators, Captain Wright, Brigadier General Jadwin, Sir H. Rumbold and even Henry Mogenth, is the type of mind which looks behind events for causes. Here is, for illustration, trouble between the Jews and other people. It is a continuous situation. There is always trouble between the two. We seldom hear of it, however, until the Jew begins to get the worst of it. As long as the Jew remains on top, making the Gentile serve the Jewish plan, there is no publicity whatever. The Gentiles may complain as much as they like, may protest and rebel, no international commissions arrive to investigate the matter. Trouble between the Jews and other people is designated as trouble only when it begins to grow inconvenient for the Jew. It is then that he sends the cry of persecution around the earth, though the plain fact may be that he is only being nipped at his own game. The Poles saw how the Jews clung together in the most admirable teamwork, a minority absolutely controlling the majority because the minority formed a close corporation and the majority did not. So the Poles said, "We will take a leaf out of the Jews' own book. They work cooperatively among themselves, we, therefore, will work cooperatively among ourselves." Which they did, and at once the cry of persecution resounded loud and long. Propaganda was begun against the good name of the Poles, more resentment followed, regrettable violence ensued, and the dispute still continues. Jewish reports of these disturbances rarely go beyond the fact that Jews are suffering from certain acts of the Polish populace. Incident after incident is given with full detail, and with a very apparent journalistic appreciation of horror. Names, dates, places, circumstances are all in order. Very well. It is no part of this article to deny or minimize the suffering of Jews wherever or for whatever cause it may occur. There is nothing whatever to be said in extenuation of injustice inflicted on the humblest human being. The murder of even one person, the terrorizing of even one family, is a very terrible thing to contemplate. It is a great pity that the world has become so accustomed to the piled-up tales of horror that it no longer has any sensibilities left to feel the shame and degradation of these things. From the days of Belgium onward, all races in Europe have suffered, and by sympathy all races in America have suffered with them, though it is a fact that we hear more, far more, about the sufferings of the Jews than of any other people. There is, however, this reaction of the practical mind. Why do these things occur? Grant that robberies, assaults and murders described in the complaint have occurred, why should they occur? Are the Polish people naturally given to perpetrating such acts? Have such acts marked the residence of the Jews in Poland for the last 800 years? And if the Polish people are not naturally abusive, if the story of the Jews' residence in Poland has been mostly pleasant, what causes the change now? That is the way the practical mind works. It seeks to know the background. Mr. Mogenta, apparently, put in too much of this background, though it's that he put in very much less than the other investigators, except Mr. Samuel. Therefore, Mr. Mogenta's report was pigeonholed by American Jewry, because the facts make very poor material for the kind of propaganda which American Jewish leaders had in mind. Apparently they did not dare publicly to criticize or renounce his report, they simply passed it over. Captain Wright, who endeavored to put in all the background he could find to make Polish conditions comprehensible to the British people, has been handled insultingly by the Jewish press. They don't want investigation. They want sympathy for themselves and denunciation for the Poles. In America, we are inclined to believe that every condition is explainable, it may be reprehensible, but it is intelligible. We believe that the explanation is the first step toward the remedy. Mr. Mogenta does not speak of pogroms at all. In this he sets an example that certain hysterical American Jews ought to follow. The present series of articles in the Dearborn Independent is a pogrom. Some Jewish spokesmen speak as if each separate article were a pogrom, in the hectic but uninstructive oratory of Hebrew Lodge meetings. But Mr. Mogenth exercises more precision in the use of words, he says. The mission has purposely avoided the use of the word pogrom, as the word is applied to everything from petty outrages to premeditated and carefully organized massacres. On one point all the reports agree, namely, that the unjust killing of Jews has been on a scale so much smaller than that alleged by the propagandists that there is no comparison. In that part of Poland where war disorder was less common, 18 persons were unjustly deprived of their lives. For the whole territory during the entire period when it was being overrun by various elements, Sir Stuart Samuel admits, apparently with reluctance, that he can count only 348. Captain Wright says, I estimate that not more than 200 or 300 have been unjustly killed. One would be too many, but, taking these casualties as a standard with which to measure the excesses committed against them, I am more astonished at their smallness than their greatness. Sir H. Rumbold says, if the excesses had been encouraged or organized by the civil and military authorities, the number of victims would probably have been much greater. That the reader may see how the various reports run with reference to specific charges of brutality, the agreements and divergences are set down. Look at the reports concerning what happened at Lemberg. 1. The excesses occurred November 21-23, 1918. The city was taken by Ukrainian troops, formerly in the Austrian service. Samuel, Mogenth, Wright, Jadwin. 2. General Mączyński raised a Polish army, about 1,500 in number, consisting of men, women, boys, some of them criminals, and, after a severe struggle, succeeded in capturing half the city, the other half of which remained in the occupation of the Ukrainians. Samuel, a few hundred Polish boys, combined with numerous volunteers of doubtful character, recaptured about half the city and held it until the arrival of Polish reinforcements on November 21. Mogenth, when the German troops revolted all over Poland at the time of the armistice, and the whole edifice of German organization fell to the ground in a day, a few Polish officers raised a small volunteer force in Lemberg, numbering between 1,000 and 2,000, which was composed of boys, roughs and criminals, and even women in uniform. For nearly a fortnight they fought in the streets against the Ukrainians and on the arrival of a similar force drove the Ukrainians out of town. This was really a splendid feat of arms. Captain Wright. 3. The Jewish part of the population of Lemberg declared itself to be neutral. Samuel. The Jewish population declared themselves neutral, but the fact that the Jewish quarter lay within the section occupied by the Ukrainians, and that the Jews had organized their own militia and, further, the rumor that some of the Jewish population had fired upon the soldiery, stimulated among the Polish volunteers an anti-Semitic bias that readily communicated itself to the relieving troops. Mogenth. During the struggle the Jews proclaimed themselves neutral, but, though I do not think they gave any armed assistance to the Ukrainians, their neutrality was highly benevolent to the Ukrainians and probably helpful. They thought the Ukrainians would win. Captain Wright. 4. In the result none of the military commanders responsible for these events has been punished. Samuel, as early as December 24, 1918, the Polish government, through the Ministry of Justice, began a strict investigation of the events of November 21 and 23. In spite of the crowded dockets of the local courts, where over 7,000 cases are now pending, 164 persons, 10 of them Jews, have been tried for complicity in the November disorders, and numerous similar cases await disposal. 44 persons are under sentences ranging from 10 days to 18 months. Aside from the civil courts, the local court-martial has sentenced military persons to confinement for as long as 3 years for lawlessness during the period in question. Mogenth. Speaking of the general subject of punishment, Captain Wright says, "The government has inflicted a good deal, though an insufficient amount of punishment. These punishments it has never published, for fear of Polish public opinion." And Brigadier General Jadwin of the United States Mission says, "If complaints as to slowness and uncertainty of military and government punishments and relief were heard, as they were, it seemed nevertheless to indicate that orderly process of government was in operation." 5. No compensation has been paid for the damage done. Samuel. This mission is advised that on the basis of official investigations the government has begun the payment of claims for damages resulting from these events. Mojenta. Payments had begun to be made in Wilna, Pinsk and Lemberg before our departure from Poland. General Jadwin. The occurrences in Lemberg were bad enough, to be sure. But Sir Stuart Samuel let it be understood that all the blame rested with the Poles. The other investigators gave reports that explain the matter, although no report could excuse it. And all but Samuel agreed that the Polish government did what it could to repair what had occurred and to prevent recurrences. This from the American report is worth considering. General Jadwin was present at the taking of Minsk and a personal witness of the strenuous efforts of the military authorities toward preventing acts of violence. The fact seems to be that as soon as any sort of order could be brought out of the chaos of war, the disorder ceased. And yet we read even today in our newspapers, of thousands and tens of thousands of Jews being slaughtered in Poland. Further, to indicate that these events did not occur without Jewish provocation to a certain extent, there is the case in Pinsk. This was on April 5, 1919. 1. Pinsk had been recaptured from the Bolsheviki a short time before. The population was overwhelmingly Jewish, only 25% being Polish. General Jadwin, Captain Wright. The Polish officer had only a very small detachment of men, and the Bolshevist lines were quite close. The Polish officer was treated with coldness by the Jews, and he suspected them of friendly relations with the Bolsheviki. He was very anxious. He had posted notices that any unauthorized meeting would be punishable by death. Captain Wright. 2. The government organizer of cooperative societies had given permission for the Jewish cooperatives to meet for discussion of the plan to join other cooperatives. Samuel, Mojenta, Wright. 3. It seems that two Polish soldiers and another soldier informed the military authorities that they had information that the Jews intended to hold a Bolshevik meeting on Saturday in what is known as the People's House, being the headquarters of the Zionists. Samuel, this meeting took place in the offices of the Zionist organization, which is very anti-Polish. Wright. It is recognized that information of Bolshevist activities in Pinsk had been received by two Jewish soldiers. Mojenta. The town commander with judgment unbalanced by fear of the Bolshevik uprising of which he had been forewarned by two Jewish soldier informers, General Jadwin. After the meeting had ended and been formally closed, a great many members of the cooperative association remained in the same room talking together. Other members of the Zionist organization, including ladies, were in the room at the same time. This collection of people must have presented the appearance of a meeting, and I think the members remaining in one room were numerous enough technically to constitute a meeting. There was some insolence in this and the previous behavior of the Jews. Sir Stuart Samuel pointed out to the witnesses that their authorized meeting itself had been a breach of the Sabbath, and therefore a grave religious offense. Captain Wright. All of the investigators agree in denouncing what followed. Captain Wright says the Polish officer would hardly have acted with such promptitude if the prisoners had been others than Jews. General Jadwin sums it up thus: the Pinsk outrage was a purely military affair. The town commander with judgment unbalanced by fear of a Bolshevik uprising of which he had been forewarned by two Jewish soldier informers sought to terrorize the Jewish population, about 75% of the whole, by the execution of 35 Jewish citizens without investigation or trial, by imprisoning and beating others and by wholesale threats against all Jews. No share in this action can be attributed to any military official higher up, to any of the Polish civil officials, nor to the few Poles resident in the district of White Russia. Sir Stuart says, under the present local administration Pinsk is once more peaceful, and the relations between the Christian and non-Christian inhabitants have become normal. It is sometimes forgotten here in the United States that for Poland the war is not yet over. Poland is now a free nation, on paper, but her freedom seems to be a day-by-day tenure, dependent on fighting. Bolshevism made serious inroads on her. Wherever the Bolshevik Red Armies swept across Poland, the Jews met them with welcomes. This is no longer denied, even in the United States. It is explained by the statement that the Bolsheviki are more friendly to the Jews than are the Poles, a statement which readers of our recent articles on the Jewish character of Sovietism can well understand. When the Poles beat back the Reds, they commonly found that the Jews had already set up Sovietism, as if they had long awaited it and were well prepared. It is scarcely strange, therefore, that the Poles still retain their suspicions. The Jews do not want to become Poles. That is the root of the present difficulty between the two peoples. Sir Stuart Samuel barely touches it. On several occasions the resentment of the soldiery and civil population was aroused by the Zionists' claim to Jewish nationality as opposed to Polish nationality. Mr. Mogentha goes a step further. This had led to a conflict with the nationalist declarations of some of the Jewish organizations which desire to establish cultural autonomy financially supported by the state. Mr. Mogentha, you will observe, gives a wider peep into conditions. But the best description of the situation is given in the report of Captain Wright. There, the Juice party program in Poland is to have all Jews on a separate register. The Jews thus registered are to elect a representative body of Jews, with extensive powers of legislation and taxation, e.g. it could tax for purposes of emigration. This body to be handed over by the Polish state a proportionate amount of money to spend on Jewish charitable and financial institutions. Besides this separate organization, a number of seats proportionate to their numbers to be set aside in every local and in the national legislature. A sixth or seventh of the Polish diet to be occupied only by Jews to be elected only by Jews. Some Jews also demand separate law courts, or at least the right to use Yiddish as well as Polish in legal proceedings. This is the practical program, but the ambition of the advanced section is national personal autonomy granted in the Ukraine by one of the ephemeral governments of the Ukraine, the Ukrainian Central Rada, on January 9, 1918, and called the Statute of National Personal Autonomy, of which I have a copy. It organizes Jews as a nation with full sovereign powers. The Ukrainian banknotes were printed in Yiddish as well as in Ukrainian. People sometimes ask, where is proof of the program of the protocols? It is everywhere the Jewish leaders have attained power, and everywhere they are striving for power. The protocols can be written out of Jewish rabbinical writings, they can be written out of Jewish tendencies in the United States, they can be written out of Jewish demands in the Balkans, they can be written out of Jewish achievements in Russia. They represent the Jewish program, ideal and real, at every stage of modern history. Do you ever hear of this Jewish program in Poland when you are invited to sympathize with 250,000 Jews who are being brought from Poland to the United States? Will these people leave their ideas outside New York Harbor? Incidentally, Captain Wright's full investigation of the Jewish program may throw some light on the refusal of the American Jews to circulate his report, although it was attached to the report of Sir Stuart Samuel, which is being so widely circulated. However, that his government at home might fully understand the situation, Captain Wright draws an illustrative parallel. If the Jews in England, after multiplying their numbers by 20 or 30, demanded that the Jewish Board of Guardians should have extensive powers, including the right to tax for purposes of emigration, and that a separate number of seats should be set aside in the London County Council, the Manchester Town Council, the House of Commons, and the House of Lords, to be occupied only by Jews chosen by Jews, that the president of the Board of Education should hand over yearly to the Jews sums proportionate to their numbers, if some were to demand the right to have separate Jewish law courts, or at least to be allowed to use Yiddish as well as English in the King's Bench and Chancery Division, if the most advanced even looked forward to a time when the Bank of England notes were to be printed in Yiddish as well as in English, then they might well find public opinion, even in England, less well disposed to them. In view of this state of affairs, it cannot be regarded as a fact of minor significance that the Jewish investigators who must have known all this virtually concealed it, and that the other investigators brought it forth to general knowledge. Neither is it of minor significance that the Jewish press has absolutely suppressed these facts even while pretending to give the results of the British mission's investigations. Insulting references have been made to Captain Wright's report in a Jewish publication of the Better Class, because he made references to certain practices which are common among the Jews in Poland. It may be said, however, that the references made by Captain Wright are in great restraint compared with the number given in the recent book by Arthur Goddard. Whether Mr. Goddard is a Jew or not, the present writer cannot now say. He is a fellow of Corpus Christi College, Cambridge. He is, lately Captain, United States Army. He was transferred from the Army at the suggestion of Mr. Mojentha, to act as counsel for the mission. And he says on page 161, after dinner Mr. Mojenth attended a meeting of the B'nai B'rit Lodge, the only chapter of this Jewish organization in Poland. No branches had been permitted in Russia before the war, as it was a secret society and therefore illegal in the Tsar's empire. Major Otto and I, not being members, walked round the town. Mr. Goddard, as counsel of the American mission, makes an excellent witness as to the kind of people who are coming in such large numbers to this country. But their sense of their own political importance and power is the principal point for Americans to consider. The peace conference did not tend to bring unity in Poland, it rather established the disunity for as long a period as the Treaty of Versailles remains to rule the world. The reader has just seen Captain Wright's description of what the Jews demanded. Let the reader now understand what the peace conference decreed. Poland is prohibited from having an election on Saturday. Poland is prohibited from having a registration on Saturday. The Jewish Sabbath is established by law, and government and courts must govern themselves accordingly. Do what you like on Sunday, order elections on Sunday, as the Poles sometimes do, but not on Saturday, it is the Jews' Sabbath. Article 11. Jews shall not be compelled to perform any act which constitutes a violation of their Sabbath, nor shall they be placed under any disability by reason of their refusal to attend courts of law or to perform any legal business on their Sabbath. Poland declares her intention to refrain from ordering or permitting elections, whether general or local, to be held on a Saturday, nor will registration for electoral or other purposes be compelled to be performed on a Saturday. What the Bolsheviki did in Russia, the peace conference did in Poland, established the Jewish Sabbath. The people who saw this strange setting up of Jewish customs as a part of the law of the land, one of the authorities for such action being the President of the United States, are now flocking to the United States in large numbers. Is it unreasonable for them to believe that if the President of the United States could bind Poland to Jewish custom, it is all right to bind the United States too? Moreover, the Jewish separate schools were established by law in Poland. Poland's great trouble has resulted from her lack of schools in which all the population could imbibe Polish ideals expressed in the Polish language. The peace conference authorizes the continuance of that source of trouble. In Article 11, the Jews were mentioned. In Article 9, the term used is Polish nationals. The reader will save himself a great deal of misunderstanding in the perusal of European news if he will translate the clause, racial, religious and linguistic minorities, to mean simply Jews. They are the minority that is at the bottom of most of the difficulty, and they are the minority that is most heard of. It was this minority that dominated the peace conference. Article 9. Poland will provide in the educational system in towns and districts in which a considerable proportion of Polish nationals of other than Polish speech are residents, adequate facilities for ensuring that in the primary schools instruction shall be given to the children of such Polish nationals through the medium of their own language. In towns and districts where there is a considerable proportion of Polish nationals belonging to racial, linguistic or religious minorities, these minorities shall be assured an equitable share in the enjoyment and application of the sums which may be provided out of public funds under the state, municipal or other budgets for education, religious or charitable purposes. But even that is not all. The Polish state is to hand over the money, but the Jews will distribute it. Educational committees appointed locally by the Jewish communities of Poland will, subject to the general control of the state, provide for the distribution of the proportional share of the funds allocated to Jewish schools in accordance with Article 9. It is most amazing how racial minorities are dropped the moment money comes into view, and the definite term Jew is substituted. More than all this, the United States of America, the British Empire, France, Italy, and Japan, the principal allied and associated powers, on the one hand, and Poland, on the other hand, so the text of the treaty begins, together make of all these special privileges, not a national agreement on the part of hard-pressed Poland, but an international demand on the part of the League of Nations. Article 12 stipulates that all the agreements affecting racial, linguistic and religious minorities, which is mere diplomatic camouflage for Jews, shall be placed under the guarantee of the League of Nations. This lifts the Jews in Poland completely out of Polish obligation. All they will have to do is complain to the League of Nations, and international Jewry will do the rest. The United States was a party toward the writing of these stipulations into the treaty. The American people are not yet a party to their enforcement. There are 250,000 of these Jews coming to the United States from Poland. You have read their demands in Poland. You have read their achievements in the peace conference. Do you say, as an American citizen, that you are ready to take for the United States the dose of Jewish medicine, which the peace conference gave to Poland? Do you say, in view of what has been said about the whole situation, that the Jews are showing anything besides a wicked and gloating spirit of revenge in the way they have propagandized against Poland after humiliating her in the peace conference? The Dearborn Independent, issue of 6th of November 1920.